ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 15, description of the kingdom of God, text 23. Yana vrajantya gabhido rachana nuvadash. Trinbankiyenya Vishaya Kukutama Tigni Yastu Shutahata Bhagaya Bhakta Saras Hamstansha Pancha Saraneshu Tamasu Hanta Yarna Vrajancha Gabhido Rachana Nuvada Trinbanti Yenya Vishaya Kukatama Tigni Yastu Shutahata Bhagaya Nibhyata Saras Tamstansha Pancha Saraneshu Tamasu Hanta Yanna Vrajancha Gabhido Rachana Nuvadach Trinvanti Enya Vishaya Kukatama Tigni Yastu Shutahata Bhagaya Nibhyata Saras Tamstansha Pancha Saraneshu Tamasu Hanta Translation Prabhupada. It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the description of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. The most unfortunate persons are the impersonals, who cannot understand the transcendental variegatedness of the spiritual world. They are afraid to talk about the beauty of the Vaikuntha planets, because they think that variegatedness must be material. Such impersonals think that the spiritual world is completely void, or in other words, that there is no variegatedness. This mentality is described here as Kukata Matikni, intelligence bewildered by unworthy words. The philosophies of voidness and of the impersonal situation of the spiritual world are condemned here because they bewilder one's intelligence. How can the impersonalist and the void philosopher think of this material world, which is full of variegatedness, and then say there's no variegatedness in the spiritual world? It is said that this material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So unless there is variegatedness in the spiritual world, how can there be temporary variegatedness in the material world? That one can transcend this material world does not imply that there is no transcendental variegatedness. Here in the Bhagavatam, in this verse particularly, it is stressed that people who try to discuss and understand the real spiritual nature of the spiritual sky and the Vaikunthas are fortunate. The very dangerous of the Vaikuntha planet is described in relation to the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. But instead of trying to understand the spiritual abode and the spiritual activities of the Lord, people are more interested in politics and economic developments. They hold many conventions, meetings, and discussions to solve the problems of this worldly situation, where they can remain for only a few years. But they are not interested in understanding the spiritual situation of the Vaikuntha world. If they are at all fortunate, they become interested in going back home, back to Godhead. But unless they understand the spiritual world, they rot in this material darkness continuously. Om again, Chimanandasya, Gananjanasaka, Chakshumilitami, Tazvah Sri Guru Vedana. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhupada, Sri Advaita Gadadha, Srivastri Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This chapter, description of the kingdom of God, has started with a difficult situation for the demigods, and in response to this difficulty, they are approaching Lord Brahma for clarification. This approaching of proper authority for clarification is what separates the suras from the asuras. The demigods did not speculate. They understood that this situation is beyond us, therefore we'll take it to the top. We'll approach Lord Brahma and ask him why the pregnancy of Diti is causing such darkness all over the universe. Now, whenever you approach a spiritual authority, you'll always get more than you bargained for. The representative of Krishna is like an ocean of mercy that is ever expanding because of the connection to Krishna. Just like these six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they are described as always increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss. A materialistic mentality is such that you calculate, there's only so much that Krishna consciousness can do for me. There's only so much knowledge and bliss available in bhakti yoga. And I think I've seen it already at this point. So now what else am I going to do in life? That is a materialistic demeanor. I've been around for 1 year, 2 years, maybe 15, maybe 20, maybe 25 years. I've seen it all. I've seen what bhakti can offer. And now my mind is starting to calculate other options. This is the mistake of thinking that the spiritual world and the activity of the spiritual world is devotional service. Fits within my tiny brain. Again and again, we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that it's not possible to describe all about Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya himself says, it's not possible to describe the whole ocean of bhakti. I'm just going to give a drop. This is what the acharyas are explaining to us. Yet, we are very stubborn. And that stubbornness is not a theoretical thing. We can see it every day in our daily execution of devotional service. We think we have it all figured out, how much Krishna consciousness can do for me. We think we've experienced it sufficiently. We have a good idea of the expanse of the ocean of bhakti. But this is not what Bhagavatam is teaching us. Therefore, it is essential to hear Bhagavatam daily in the association of devotees, because then you will feel your horizons expanding. Or, put another way, then you'll be more conscious of the ever-expanding horizons of bhakti yoga. Simply by hearing Bhagavatam submissively in the association of serious devotees, then something mystical happens. Because that is Krishna's system for understanding the supreme mystic person. Now, the demigods, they wanted an answer about Why this darkness? What's going on in Diti's room? What has Diti done that is causing such a pregnancy? In answering that question, you're getting a whole description of the vibrance of planets, which is leading to the discussion of the four Kumaras going to the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. And in this way, the pastime of Jaya and Vijaya will be revealed. So Brahma is explaining all that. But the question was simply, why is there this darkness caused by the pregnancy of Diti? This is the way of spiritual exchanges. This is the way of interactions between devotees, that whatever a devotee does with another devotee, it should always lead to an increase in spiritual understanding, spiritual awareness. And Brahma, as the head of the Sampradaya, he's demonstrating this principle. You came to me asking me about the darkness, but now I'm going to tell you about Vaikuntha. I'm going to describe what goes on in the Vaikuntha planets. This is the mercy of the devotee, always ready to give more. Therefore, when you approach a saintly person, you'll always get more than you bargain for. You should find that your detachment from material nature increases and your attachment to Krishna increases. Brahma is describing how unfortunate it is, how regrettable it is that people have no interest in Vaikuntha Katha. This is an emotional reaction of Lord Brahma. Often devotees wonder, how do my emotions fit into Krishna consciousness? Am I being a fully balanced person by practicing sadhana bhakti? Or maybe I'm neglecting a part of myself? Maybe after 5 or 10 or 20 years of devotional service, I'll realize there are parts of me I didn't pay attention to. So maybe I should be careful about how much I give to Krishna now. Maybe I should be careful about how much I get absorbed in devotional service, because I could be neglecting a part of myself by becoming absorbed in devotional service. Lord Brahma is displaying his emotional life for you to see. Don't just read these verses as if they're kind of just one-dimensional or devoid of heart content. No, this is a deep, heartfelt reaction. It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the description of the Vaikuntha planets. This is Brahma pouring out his heart. Now, maybe we don't see that because our hearts aren't so developed, but this is exactly what's going on. As a detail, in Satchaloka, the highest planet in the material world, the residents don't have gross bodies. Therefore, there's no such thing there as gross physical pain. They have subtle bodies, and the only pain that those subtle bodies feel on Satchaloka is when they see the situation of illusion-conditioned souls. That causes pain. So Brahma is speaking like this. It is so regrettable what they're doing. How could anyone live without hearing Vaikuntha Katha? If you want to understand the heart of the Vaishnava, then you take these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam very seriously. Just like when Prahlad Maharaj reveals his heart. Personally, I don't have any problems. Why? Because I'm always absorbed in the Mahamrita, the great ocean of nectar, hearing and chanting Krishna's glories. So I'm fine. Now this is Prahlad Maharaj, who's got such a demoniac father, whose father has done everything to torture him. Of course, at this point, when Prahlad is offering the prayers, Lord Nrsimhadev has just killed his father. Still, in spite of all the tribulation, and in spite of seeing his father killed in front of his eyes, what is Prahlad Maharaj saying? Actually, I don't have any problems. I'm always swimming in the Mahamrita, the ocean of hearing and chanting about Krishna. But I do have a deep emotional concern for others. First of all, he describes his own emotional situation, that I'm swimming in the Mahamrita. That's not a dry theoretical thing. He's revealing that this is my heart feeling the happiness of glorifying Krishna. So I don't have any material problems. But still, when I look and see these conditioned souls, what they're doing, then I have a problem. He uses that word, which Krishna also uses in Bhagavad Gita, vimudha. Mudha's fool, vimudha, super fool. So, I'm concerned so much in my heart about the super fools. Krishna says in the Gita, vimudhan anupashyanti, pashyanti jnana chakshusha. The fools, these super fools, cannot understand why they have a body now, where did the body come from, what kind of body will they have in the future. They don't understand this, but those who see with eyes of knowledge, jnana chakshus, they can understand. So Prahlad says, this is my emotional problem, the others. I'm lamenting for them. Shoche tatoba mukache tisa indriyata. What are they doing? They're laboring hard carrying a false burden. Now it's bad enough to labor carrying a real burden, but you can imagine how crazy your situation is when you're laboring to carry a false burden, an imaginary burden. This imaginary burden is called Maya Sukaya, that you think you're doing something that's creating happiness, but all you are doing is creating distress for yourself. So Prahlad Maharaj is revealing his emotions. This causes me pain to see that. Therefore, he goes further. Prayena deva munaya swava mukti kama. I see that there are many great saintly persons, and they have taken monavrata, vows of silence. They are swava mukti kama. They're lusty for their own liberation from material suffering. Therefore, they stay alone in the Himalayas. They stay in solitary places. They don't go near the ordinary population. That's not where I'm at. That is not my emotional situation. Where am I at? I don't want to go back to Godhead alone. I want to help all the others to go back. Therefore, I stay in the big cities and towns, not in the solitary places. Because I don't want to go back to Godhead without helping all these other foolish people to go with me. This is an emotional statement. It's very difficult for materialists to understand the emotions of a Vaishnava. But by letting these shlokas from Srimad Bhagavatam enter our heart, then our spiritual heart comes alive. You see, so many of us may have this fear that how does my heart come alive in bhakti? Due to lifetime after lifetime of sense gratification, we think the only way your heart really comes alive is through pungent, gross sense gratification. This is our unfortunate state. When we think of the heart coming alive, we think of passionate activities. Therefore, we're a little suspicious of bhakti. What will my heart really do in bhakti? How will my heart be fulfilled? How will my heart pump with delight? What does bhakti have to offer to me? We have this fear that after year of rendering devotional service, maybe my heart will not be satisfied. Maybe my heart will remain untouched. And then it's like Arjuna asked Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, what is the position of someone who fails at bhakti yoga, but they already gave up the material world? It seems they lose both ways. They failed as a materialist, they failed as a spiritualist. Therefore, my Lord, aren't they like a ribbon cloud? A cloud, a piece of cloud that's separated from the other clouds and just blown away by the wind and has no position anywhere. Is this the situation? This question was very important for Arjuna. Therefore he said, my dear Lord, only you can dispel this doubt. I'm presenting it to you. Arjuna is showing what are the fears in devotional service? And he's presenting them to Krishna for clarification. Now, how do we get the confidence that our heart is going to be satisfied in devotional service? First of all, we have to understand the significance of the daily things in devotional life that we're doing. Once we understand the significance of the activities of devotional service, then we'll see hope for ourselves. The more we understand the so-called little things of bhakti yoga, the more we'll see what our future is. By understanding the activities of bhakti, we'll agree to put our heart into these activities. Now, when you first come in the beginning, you're overwhelmed by the feeling of relief from the material world, which is appropriate. You should be grateful to Krishna that you could take up Krishna consciousness and you don't have to bang your head against the wall anymore. You can just imagine yourself. You spent lifetime after lifetime just banging your head against the wall. Again and again and again. Naturally, if you just suddenly stop banging your head against the wall, you are going to feel relief. So this is what happens when persons first come to Krishna consciousness. They're just ecstatic, they think, because, wow, I'm not banging my head against the wall. What a feeling of not banging my head against the wall. This is great. I mean, really, I'm not banging my head against the wall. Now, that is something, but it's just the beginning. We must make further progress beyond the platform of just feeling relief from material existence. The next step is to invest our heart's energies into devotional service so we can understand what is enlivening. But if we just cling to feeling relief from material life, we won't advance beyond the nearby platform. Lord Brahma, in his descriptions of the kingdom of God, is stimulating our spiritual appetite. He's regretting that materialists don't want to hear about Vaikuntha. And he's pointing out, don't just think it's an arbitrary thing. Okay, this group is hearing about Vaikuntha. This group is not hearing about Vaikuntha. Anyway, as long as everybody's satisfied in their own way, that's all right. No, Brahma's not saying that. He's saying that those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. In other words, there is a reaction for how you use your tongue. There is a reaction for what is the content of your conversation. If you misuse your conversational abilities, if you misuse your tongue for discussing non-Vaikuntha katha, you get a reaction. You're thrown deeper into the darkness of material existence. Krishna also says this in Bhagavad Gita. Tanaham drishata kruvan samsareshu naradama. Those who are intent on ignoring their spiritual development and they are dedicated to satisfying their senses, trying to satisfy their senses, they will be thrown into the ocean of material existence. So there's serious consequences to what we are doing with our life. We shouldn't just drift along aimlessly, as I try to point out often. Devotional service involves a daily attempt to come to grips with what is my constitutional position in this world. Krishna consciousness is meant to produce those kinds of persons, even from the ranks of the brain-dead people of today. Hard job. We were discussing a verse in Gita class last night, 18th chapter, 5th verse, I believe 5th verse, where, no, not 5th verse, huh? 5th. Where Krishna says that yajna, dana, tapa, dharma, activities of sacrifice, charity, and austerity are never to be given up. Even the great souls are purified by sacrifice, charity, and austerity. In this verse, Krishna is showing the components of a real human civilization. And we were explaining last night that whether someone is a great soul or they are a neophyte, when they are practicing Krishna consciousness, they can look around them and they don't see any supportive society whatsoever. They don't see any appreciation. They don't see any recognition, any encouragement from the surrounding material society that how wonderful it is. You're practicing yajna, you're practicing dana, you're practicing austerity. Oh, all glories to you. We can't do it, but you go right ahead. We're fully supporting you. You don't get that. In fact, you get the opposite. What are you guys doing? You're wasting your time. Look at you, young men wearing saffron. What are you guys trying to prove? Older men wearing white, trying to live a respectable household life, controlling your senses. Get real. Ladies wearing saris, acting modestly and shyly. Come on, this is not how it's done in life. So you don't get any kind of support or encouragement whatsoever. And therefore, as we were discussing last night, you sometimes may feel doubts in your heart. Am I doing the right thing? You actually get rattled unconsciously, like, you know, I'm just like doing this activity which practically no one else in the world is doing. It's just a few hundred persons here, and you're constantly asking yourself, is this the right thing? And because you're constantly asking yourself that question, you can't put your heart completely into devotional service. We have to recognize that a great portion of our lack of resolution in bhakti is coming from the fact that we are practicing Krishna consciousness amidst a very demoniac setting. There's no recognition of yajna, dana, and tapa, sacrifice, charity, and penance. None whatsoever. And sometimes even as devotees, we forget these things are essential to devotional service. That's why Krishna says, knowing our propensity, Krishna says, these things, yajna, dana, and tapa, sacrifice, charity, and austerity, purify even the great souls. It's very interesting that Prabhupada lectured on this verse from Bhagavad Gita on Radhastami. Bhagavad Gita verse, you know, yajna, dana, tapa, karma. These activities of sacrifice, charity, and penance should not be given up. This was his Radhastami lecture. And at the end of his lecture, he spoke about Srimati Radharani, how he better tried to please her, and then she recommends him to Krishna. But basically, the whole lecture was about this Gita verse. He was speaking at Bhaktivedanta Manor on Radhastami, showing us how expensive bhakti is. It's not a cheap thing that you just come along and I tell you about Radha Krishna, I initiate you overnight and boom, you're on your way. This is not at all how Prabhupada demonstrated things. Obviously, he knew the pitfalls of this world. He knew the trouble his disciples could fall into, his followers, future followers could fall into. So, there he is, speaking on this Gita verse on Radhastami in order to protect us. Now, when we hear Lord Brahma glorifying Vaikuntha, we should not think that, well, that's the extent of Brahma's realization. Yes, by the mercy of the Lord, he gets a vision of Vaikuntha, but he also gets to see Goloka Vrindavan too. And this is demonstrated so powerfully at the conclusion of the Brahma Vimohana Leela, the bewilderment of Lord Brahma. Brahma actually had it in his mind that can this cowherd boy who's tending his cows in the forest and taking lunch with his friends, can that really be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I wonder. Let me make a test. It's a bit too much for me to grasp. This little boy taking lunch on the bank of the Yamuna with his friends, that is the real Krishna? It's not that Brahma was an atheist. No, he accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the Vrindavan pastimes were so inconceivable because of their simplicity that even Brahma became bewildered. So he thought, let me just tinker a little bit, see what's going on here. And in the process, as you know, he became bewildered. So much so that he became stunned like a stick, seeing all the cows and cowherd boys turn into four-handed Narayan forms, each with their own Vaikuntha planet. Krishna showed him, I've taken the place of all the calves and cowherd boys that you've stolen. They're all Vishnu Tattva now. And look, they've got their own planet, their own Vaikuntha planet. How can you compare to that? You can't do anything like that. So Brahma's mind was so blown that he became stunned looking at this scene, and then he just couldn't see at all. His whole power of vision disappeared. In this way, he felt so insignificant, and he offered his famous prayers to the Lord. At the conclusion of his prayers, he said, people may say they know everything about Krishna. Let them go on talking that way. They say they know everything about Krishna. They can go on talking like that. I'm not going to say that. As far as I'm concerned, everything about Krishna is beyond my body, mind, and words. Then he begged for benediction. He said, if I have any good fortune, please just let me take birth as a devotee. Whether in this lifetime as Brahma or in another lifetime as whatever, even in the animal species, I don't mind. I just want to take birth as a devotee. And then particularly, he asked for the benediction of taking birth in Vrindavan. He said, let me be a blade of grass inside Vrindavan, so that when the residents of Vrindavan walk, they'll bathe my head with their dust. And if by chance I can't make it as a blade of grass inside Vrindavan, then let me be outside, because when they walk outside of Vrindavan, I'll still get the mercy. This is Lord Brahma's prayer. This is his highest aspiration. And then he reminded Krishna. He said, you gave yourself to Putana. You gave Putana the full mercy. So what is left for you to give to the residents of Vrindavan? In other words, I'm not making a mistake by taking shelter of you, because even Putana, who came to kill you, you gave her such a status in Vrindavan. And it makes me wonder, what more do you have to give for your dear devotees who've never done anything malicious to you, but have always tried to love you? Then Brahma exclaims with ecstasy, Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam, Nanda Gopa Vajalkasam, Yanmatram Paramanandam, Purnam Brahma Sanatanam. Oh, how fortunate! Who can measure the great fortune? Says it twice in ecstasy. This is his emotional outburst. Who can be more fortunate than Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the residents of Vrindavan, because they are associating in friendship with the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Supreme Eternal. Well, Brahma had presents his highest aspiration to Krishna, and then he says, please give me permission to go back to my post. Because actually, Brahma is feeling a little out of place in Vrindavan. He's the great creator, demigod, and here he is amongst the simple residents of Vrindavan. He knew he was a bit out of place, but still he had to make that last appeal to the Lord before going back. And what was Krishna's reaction? Silence. Why was Krishna silent after all these most wonderful prayers by Brahma? Krishna was silent because he was thinking, who is this four-headed Brahma? I'm just a cowherd boy, taking care of my cows. What's he talking about? And all these majestic prayers. And also, Krishna was indicating that you have your service to do. Work now, samadhi later. Go back to your devotional service as the creator. In time, you'll be able to come to Vrindavan. So, Brahma certainly has a right to feel such great regret that people do not talk about Vaikuntha, especially when he has realization not only of Vaikuntha, but of also Goloka Vrindavan, and here in this verse today, he's presenting his emotional feelings for us to be inspired by his realization. That is what you're getting in Srimad Bhagavatam. Any quick questions? Comments from those students? All right. All glories to the Prabhupada.